on the front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Our guest today, 89-year-old Clay Comer of Fresno, California. When we left off, he'd been in the San Diego area in 1944, training to be part of the AAA, the anti-aircraft artillery, firing these 40 millimeters. And I imagine you're thinking someday you're going to have to leave the States and head overseas. Were you looking forward to that, or were you kind of dreading the day that you would have to ship out?
You know, there was, I guess I wasn't smart enough to have any thoughts to that effect. I just was doing what they said to do and trying to do my very best. We succeeded in doing that very thing. And I remember now back up on when we went out on that maneuver out there on that, what is called the Borrego Desert. We were firing at this sleeve, and I asked the lieutenant in charge, he said, you got to stop every once in a while and give the barrel a rest because it gets too hot. And I said, well, what do you do when the plane keeps coming in? He said, you keep right on firing until that barrel just flicks out the projectile. So I thought that was kind of a cute explanation he gave me, because I could just see that barrel drooping down and flipping out the bullets.
So when was it that they sent you overseas?
What happened, I was having all this good time with the 40-millimeter unit, and during that period of time, the boys were over fighting the Germans, and they had a great big offensive the Germans did put on called, obviously and famously, the Battle of the Bulge. So they made a big effort to regain, I guess, whatever they had lost. It was during the winter that this took place, and there were many casualties of not necessarily wounded people, but were frozen. We weren't as accustomed to that kind of cold, so there were a lot of people back in the hospitals with frozen feet and so on, and so they needed infantry replacements badly, and so our little happy 40 millimeter outfit started headed down toward Texas to a camp, and the nearer we got to that camp, the more we realized, hey, that's an infantry camp, so we're going to be infantrymen, and we were. We took infantry basic. I remember on the parade grounds when we were inspected by what we call or were known as 90-day wonders. Those are the people with a little education that received a commission going in and become lieutenants, second lieutenants. When you stood at attention out there with your rifle for inspection, and that lieutenant reached for it to look down the bore and make sure it was clean, you better cut away your hands, and because if he snatches it out of your hands, the butt of that rifle might hit where you would prefer it didn't. So knowing this, it was the case, myself and a bunch of my buddies in the barracks, after we were turned in, we would practice doing different things. And one of the things we practiced was that rifle inspection. We got very proficient at cutting our hands away the instant that we saw a movement from the hand toward that rifle to inspect it. Sure enough, the guy comes in front of me and the second lieutenant, and I'm watching him real close, and he made a move for it, and my hands were gone. They were down at my sides. That rifle was falling, and we both caught it down by about my knee at knee height before it hit the ground. However, the rifle didn't hit the ground because we both caught it there, and it was embarrassing, of course, to him. And on the parade ground, it slanted off a little bit, and his helmet, I think it was probably a helmet liner, was knocked off in doing that maneuver, and it rolled down the parade ground, and so it was a very embarrassing moment for that second lieutenant. That was one of my memories of something that happened comically. Yeah, we used to just do all kinds of stuff, because I used to be a very active person doing gymnastics, so I taught people in the barracks after hours how to dive over a stack of foot lockers at least three high, maybe four high, and then hit the ground on the other side and roll where you don't hurt yourself. So those kind of things, and I did a certain amount of weightlifting too, and it served me well, of course, later when I got into moving business, because you had to have a little bit of strength.
I imagine it served you well as an infantryman too, with the 83rd Infantry Division, the 329th Regiment, and I know you've got some close calls that you're going to describe. Were you concerned at all for your own well-being? Was there any thought in your mind that now that you are replacement infantry, you're going to be sent in situations you hadn't been in before, that you might not get to come home from this war?
No, I think that I can't speak for the other, but I just did what I was asked to do and tried to do my best at it. And never occurred to me that I wasn't coming back. I had a positive attitude, of which I continue today, which serves me well. And somehow or other, I just never was a fatalist and thought that anything would ever happen to me. And I was correct, although I did have some pretty close calls. And even my squad leader was shot and killed. And that was while we were chasing the Germans after the Battle of the Bulge. We pretty much had them on the run across Germany. And some of the attacks that we had to do were at Colonel Krebel's plan was a night attack. And so it was during one of these night attacks, we're approaching a village. Our squad is going up both sides of the road, and all of a sudden we're taking fire from in the village, and I hit the ground, and I lost my helmet. And I thought, what the heck, where is it? I'm groping around in the dark, and I finally located my helmet, put it back on my head, and later in the daylight, when I examined that helmet, there was a bullet hole had entered, I think on the right-hand side, traveled between the helmet liner and the helmet, left a blue-gray streak right around the top of the helmet and out the opposite side. I never even knew that it had happened, but in all the confusion and the shouting and shooting, it never occurred to me, and I should never have parted with that helmet because it did save my life. So that was just one of a couple of other occasions, but that was the most, should I say, closest call that I had to losing my life was when I had my helmet shot off my head. And so trust me, the helmet liner was my saving grace, because had it not been there, it wouldn't have deflected the projectile of the bullet and caused it to spin or go around the helmet and slide out the other side. Believe me, that'll make you a believer right there. And I've had a number of things, in fact, that happened during my life, about not more than, say, five, that should have taken my life. And that was probably the most closest one, which brings up another story that I want to ask Paul if I want to get into. And I titled it My Guardian Angel, because too many times I should not be here today, which I am in pretty damn good shape. And it's all because of that guardian angel that took care of me on situations like that. Some of them happened while I was still a child, or a young man going to grammar school and things, and then the other incidents were military related.
Well, I think everyone's open to hearing about your guardian angel. I do want to follow up about that specific incident. It's just so everyone listening understands. So you're taking fire, you hit the ground, you don't realize your helmet's been shot off, it's just not there anymore. Is that because it was so loud and chaotic and there's so much going on that you didn't even feel or hear it?
Other than when I was on the ground, I guess I realized I didn't have a helmet on, and that's kind of a naked feeling when you're taking fire and you know that that helmet is one of the things that can, between you and the enemy, that can save your life. And in my case, it did. I don't remember how we got out of that situation, but perhaps it was one of Colonel Krebel's ideas that you're pinned down and you have to overtake the enemy at the edge of the town, holding it there. So the command was passed throughout whatever other squads were there. At a signal, we would all get up and start what is called marching fire. You fire as much as you can, as fast as you can, in the direction where you're taking fire from, and they'll have to keep their heads down in order to not be hit. And so you come right up on them, and you finally got the rifles in their faces, so to speak, and they surrender. The Germans will. They're smart enough. They weren't like, we understand some of the Japanese were fanatical enough, they wouldn't even surrender. But at least the Germans know when it's time to give up, and they did. More than one occasion, we did a marching fire, and it paid off and got you out of a tight situation.
It has to be pretty nerve-wracking in the moment, though, to just stand up and march toward a spot where you know there are weapons and ammunition that can take you out.
Yeah, it is. And you stand side by side. You don't want to get in front of one another because you'd hit one another. So it was all marched in a line as tight as you can get and firing as much and as fast as you can with your M1s. You just waste a whole clip and then reload another clip as fast as you can from your bandolier that you got hanging around your neck that's made your neck sore from the weight of that ammunition that's hanging around your neck, not just one, but one going one way and one going the other way, to give you plenty of firepower when you needed it. And speaking of the M1 rifle, when I was given my first training there with the 83rd Infantry Division, the sergeant took a look at me, and I was fairly husky enough. He says, I want to give you a BAR, a Browning Automatic Rifle. You can handle it, because it was a little bit larger and quite a bit heavier. Many of the military people know a Browning Automatic Rifle. And I said, well, sir, that's nice, but I can't fire a BAR. And he said, why not? And I said, because my left eye is my master eye. I sight with my left eye. I shoot a rifle left-handed, and the BAR ejects the shells out the right-hand side. It would have ejected the shells right into my face. Oh, okay then. So I lucked out and didn't get a BAR. And that was another one of those situations where, had I been given a BAR, I could have lost my life simply because of that, because the enemy, if given the opportunity to take out one of the persons in the squad coming toward them, will take out the guy with the automatic rifle first. And so I wasn't carrying that. In fact, I was the assistant squad leader. As such, I brought up the rear, which is a nice place to be if you don't want to be the lead guy, because I did have it one instance where our leader, Mr. McKay, Sergeant McKay, was shot and killed. That was not a pleasant time, of course. So I've witnessed pretty much everything in that type of tight combat. And thank goodness it was in the latter part of the war when we had the Germans pretty much on the run when the Battle of the Bulge took place. Had I been in there in the early years, big chance I would not be here today. So I'm thankful that I was the age I was and came into the Army when I did, and not in those early, tremendously precarious days that took a lot of our men.
And you mentioned Sergeant McKay being shot and killed. What did that do to you? Because obviously this is a guy that you've spent some time with, somebody that was more than just a number and a face to you.
You know, that's a good question. I don't know how that you can put something like that out of your mind, but I guess we have been given the ability, thankfully, to not let it change who you are and what you do. You take it as part of what's happening and what's going on. You just move on from there because you're so busy trying to preserve, I guess, your own life and do what is expected of you that you don't have the time to stop and dwell on the loss of one of your squad members. So that, I think, is the best answer I can provide for you.
And you wanted to share more about your guardian angel, who you certainly felt was with you in that German village when your helmet got shot off.
Yeah, I remember, too, one time when we were during this is daytime now, we were advancing, and we see two Germans look like they're deserters run into a building, a house, and lock the door behind them real fast. So we approached that building. One of the fellows that carried in our squad, we referred to it as a grease gun because it resembled the grease gun that we used to lubricate our chassis of our cars. But it was a cheaply made 45 caliber machine gun that was furnished for the Army. And it was a dangerous weapon because if the bolt, they call it the bolt cover, the bolt picks up the round and fires it. But if that bolt cover is open, it can pick up a round and fire it. My friend standing next to me was hammering the butt of that grease gun against the door to get them to open it. The bolt cover was open, and so the bolt slid back, picked up a round and fired it right back in our direction. And it hit the guy standing next to me right in the shoulder. And of course that took him out of action, but it only missed me by the distance between him and me. So that was another example of the guardian angel being on my side. I'm sure that some of the fellows that were in the Army know what I mean by the grease gun. I gave a very poor description of it, but it was a 45 caliber, a cheap version you might see of the old 45 caliber Tommy gun.
So you get over there in early 1945, the war in Europe ends in May of 1945. Was it pretty much constant movement, constant combat for you over those months?
Well, actually, what took place there, because at that point we did have the Germans on the run, our 83rd Division had our segment of Germany to cover, and we're going across it so fast and the Germans in retreat that sometimes we had to ride on anything that we can to just keep up with their retreat. I remember riding on top of a Sherman tank with not only myself, but all kinds of GIs on top of that tank, and them riding in anything they can. In fact, we had been nicknamed the ragtag circus pursuing the Germans in their retreat. They've finally got on the other side of the Elbe River. We went clear up to where we could see the searchlights from Berlin, and we were told to stop. The Russians were going to take Berlin, and we were to withhold and stop there. Big mistake, but we did. But it was pretty chaotic when we were crossing Germany and met with, at least our segment, met with very little resistance once they were on a run. And I'm sure that we did our share of capturing the Germans. And, of course, we overran prison camps that the Germans had interned prisoners. And it was a pretty sad sight to see them in their condition that they were kept.
Yes, I need to stop you there for now. It's break time. When we come back, we'll hear about what Mr. Comer witnessed in April of 1945 at that concentration camp in Langenstein. The rest of Hometown Heroes right after this.